Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's been 20 years. Iconic guests.
My guest is Danica Patrick.
I mean, you've been doing this for 17 years. You might be the OG of podcasts.
We all know this gentleman. Let's give David Stern a big round of applause. In 2004, we launched Sports Business Radio, and David was kind enough to be my first guest. He was just joking in the green room that he launched my career. So.
He hasn't let me go since. It's really impossible.
My guest is Emmett Smith. I think being authentic, being who you are, and being unapologetic about it, and being open to receive knowledge in areas that you may be unaware of, that's okay too.
My guest is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
International growth is something that I'm always thinking a lot about, and both for the NBA and for the game. And it's a recognition that nothing is preordained.
My guest is Bob Costas.
You know, Brian, as you said, I've been so lucky and did so many things that I could never even have dreamed of doing. All I really want to do now is return to the things that are most truthful to me as a person and a professional.
The biggest names in sports.
My guest is Maria Sharapova.
I wanted to be in those rooms and I wanted to be in those meetings because there was something inside of me that said that although tennis was a big part of my life, it wasn't going to be my life in capital letters, and I had to become savvy and smart. A big part of sport is business.
Our guest this week, Sue Bird.
Who told you I'm a bowler? That's hilarious.
I read that you're like a good bowler and you break 200 when you bowl. Is that not true? Is that false media report?
No, that's all fact.
Welcome to year 20 of Sports Business Radio. Now, here's your host, Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio. Another iconic guest lined up for you this week here in year 20 of Sports Business Radio. None other than Cal Ripken Jr., first ballot Hall of Famer, owner of the longest consecutive game streak in baseball history, 2,632 games, two-time American League MVP, 19-time Major League Baseball All-Star, member of Major League Baseball's All-Century team. He's one of 10 players in Major League Baseball history to have over 3,000 hits and 400 home runs. He played his entire 21-year career with the Baltimore Orioles, and now he's a co-owner of the Orioles as part of David Rubenstein's new ownership group. I think you're going to love this conversation with Cal Ripken Jr. coming up on this edition of Sports Business Radio. I'm joined by executive producer Brian Griggs. Griggs, how are you?
I'm great. And as soon as you said you had Cal Ripken Jr. coming on, I'm like, okay, got to go pull up some highlights and refresh my memory about how good this guy was. And wow, I mean, there's just YouTube's full of them. It was great. I spent about an hour just going through all the old clips. But man, the accolades, you just listed off some of those too. He has done so much for the game of baseball and continues to do. Great interview. Definitely listen to this one.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Cal Ripken Jr., and I remember when the streak was going on, not only is he beloved by Orioles fans, by baseball fans, but Griggs, he transcended sports because he was a guy who showed up to work every day. And the blue-collar worker out there could relate to Cal Ripken Jr. on a non-baseball level because you went, you know what? This guy is dedicated to his job. He shows up every day for work. He's there every inning for 5 years of the streak. And he just won't sit down and he produces at a high level. And, you know, you can depend on Cal Ripken like the sun coming up. So it was really cool, you know, for me after 20 years to be able to have a conversation with an American icon. I mean, let's face it, like when I watch the movie The Natural with Robert Redford, and I think of the epitome of a baseball player, I think of Cal Ripken Jr. I mean, we've had Ken Griffey Jr. on this show, Greg Maddux, Ryan Sandberg, John Smoltz, all baseball Hall of Famers. Wonderful in their own right. But when I close my eyes and I think of an American iconic baseball player, it's Cal Ripken Jr., Griggs.
Yeah, he is baseball. I mean, you mentioned his whole career with Baltimore. I mean, you don't even hear that anymore. Nobody plays their whole career with a team. And it wasn't like five seasons, 21 seasons. Like, that's incredible right there. And that tells you his work ethic, because the team's like, we're not losing this guy. He shows up every day. He plays no matter what he's doing. I mean, I'm sure he played hurt half of his career too. And he's like, I'm going out and playing. And he did it. So yeah, icon in baseball, icon off the field and on the field. So it's fun stuff.
Well, and one of the great things about Sports Business Radio is we get to talk to these elite athletes about their next act and what are they doing in the business world. And I got to tell you, Cal Ripken continues to impact the baseball world and the community via his work with Ripken Baseball, the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. He's leaving quite a legacy behind beyond his playing career. And, you know, we love to see what these athletes do in their chapter after their career is done. He's doing those things. He's the co-owner of the Orioles. He recently entered into a partnership with billionaires Josh Harris and David Blitzer. We'll talk about that. So, you know, I love seeing this other side of Cal Ripken. Again, most people, you mentioned Cal Ripken Jr. and they know the iconic baseball player, but he's got so many other things going on in his life. And then, you know, I'll say this, what a tribute all of this is to Cal Ripken Sr., who was the one who really got Cal Ripken and Billy into baseball, and they're building all these fields in the inner city and they're getting people involved in baseball through Ripken Baseball. So just a wonderful tribute. You can see and listen in this interview the love and respect that Cal Ripken Jr. has for his father.
Yeah, I mean, he's just built such a legacy. And like you mentioned too, how we learn about these athletes when they're off the field. Well, his career spoke for itself, and then he's taking it to the next level and helping kids and helping communities and, you know, reliving stuff through his dad. And it's just fascinating stuff. He's done so well. And you hit on that in the interview about what he's doing now, and it's great stuff.
All right, that's coming up in moments. But before we get to that, Griggs, both of us watched the roast of Tom Brady on Netflix. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't really know what to expect. I haven't watched a roast in a long time. You know, it used to be back in the day, it was Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, and roasts have kind of gone away because everyone's so sensitive and, you know, you can't really criticize anyone anymore. And so I turned this thing on. I don't know if it's going to be 30 minutes, 60 minutes. It turns out to be 3 hours. And Griggs, I got to tell you, I couldn't turn away. It was live. I watched it live. It's on demand now. You can watch it on demand. But they had all of the characters there. You know, we talked about the dynasty with Matt Hamacek a few weeks ago, the director of the dynasty on this show. And you got to get the main characters, Brady, Kraft, Belichick. Well, this had Gronk there and Julian Edelman and Drew Bledsoe. And Peyton Manning stops by and Ben Affleck comes by. I mean, and then you have these world-class comedians who pull no punches. Like, nothing was off limits. Kevin Hart was the host. And as soon as he started in on Brady, you were like, oh my gosh, like this, I don't know how much they're paying Brady to sit through this, but it better be a lot of money because he is taking a lot of heat right now. But Griggs, what did you think of the roast of Tom Brady?
Man, it was iconic. And I was with you too. I'm like, when's the last time you watch a roast? You know, and you're like, oh, is it going to be all? No, it was non-edited. It was Netflix flying F-bombs and this and that and sex talk and everything. I mean, it was just classic from the very first start off. It was awesome. And I mean, a couple of my favorites, Ron Burgundy. I mean, you can't go wrong with Will Ferrell comes out as Ron Burgundy and does the whole skit like he's Ron Burgundy. I'm kind of a big deal in this stuff. And that was great. And then of course you coach Belichick, amazing. And he's so fun when he's not behind a press mic and you see him actually be himself and just being clowny and fun. Peyton Manning, I mean, he was great, just solid business deal, but he's just ripping him apart at the same time. So I thought it was really well done. And just, you got to go watch it. It's worth a watch.
again, it's one of those things. It's kind of like The Last Dance, the documentary. You're like, wait, this is 10 parts. Am I really going to watch? And you're like, wow, I could have watched 10 more parts. Yeah. Well, this was 3 hours. I probably could have watched another hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it was captivating watching it live. X and social media was on fire with this. I need to know from John Orand, our friend, or Andrew Marshon, like, how much did Tom Brady get paid for this? Like, it better have been at least $10 million for sitting through this punishment that he had to endure. And then, you know, are they flying in Belichick? Are they flying in Kraft? Drew Bledsoe, like the two people that could have easily said, you know what, I'm good, I'm not coming to this, would have been Bill Belichick and Drew Bledsoe. And they were both so funny. And we got to see a different side of them. And, you know, you could tell Brady appreciated them being there. And then at the end, we saw kind of a different side of Brady, too. It almost reminded me a little bit of Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame acceptance speech, where he basically, like, said F you to everyone who screwed me along the way. And Brady kind of did the same thing. Like, hey, you know, I was 199th pick and, you know, I was the best decision the Patriots ever made. And I won 7 Super Bowls. And, you know, he says to Belichick, like, something along the lines of, you know, they don't give credit to the people filling up gas in the cars at the Indy 500. Kind of like, hey, you're filling up my gas, but I'm the car that drives and I'm the driver. And, you know, there were some things there that he said at the end that it was, as I tweeted out, it was part comedy, part therapy session.
Yeah.
Like, there were some things that were being worked out here. Alex Guerrero took a lot of strays. The guy who's been, you know, training Brady for all of these years and has him on some crazy diet and things like that. You could tell that there were several players and Belichick who had been waiting for years to fire off some missiles at Alex Guerrero. Yeah. And they took this as the opportunity to do it. So it was fascinating. If you haven't watched it, look, we're not getting paid by Netflix. They're not a sponsor, but it was really entertaining. Like, usually I watch something and the bar is, it falls beneath what I had hoped. This was really entertaining. And, you know, it's not something to watch with your kids, to be honest with you. It is not for little ones. But if you want some good laughs, you know, it was really well done. And for a 3-hour show, I thought it ran on time. No one went too long. And they just had a ton of people on there. The only person I thought really bombed, I guess I'll just say it, he'll probably never come on the show, Ben Affleck. I mean, my gosh, like, what? He was kind of incoherent, and I'm not sure, you know, what the purpose. Obviously, he's Boston. He knows Tom Brady. He's a big name, but he was the kind of the one person that I could have lived without him in the roast.
I think for me, it was Kim Kardashian. Just seemed like, who cares? She's reading teleprompter. Yeah. Like, it was dumb. And people were booing her the second she got up there, which that was good. But other than that, it was pretty. Gronk slamming the shot glass, that was good. You know, it was fun too. It was the Tom Brady roast, but nobody was off limits. Anybody on that stage was pretty much getting blasted the entire time. Kevin Hart took a bunch, obviously. Gronk took a lot of heat. It was fun. I mean, it's just watch it. It's great.
That is true. I mean, Dana White caught some heat. Like, there was a lot of collateral damage. Yeah. Brady was the one on the marquee for getting roasted, but there was a lot of collateral damage with anyone within any vicinity of the stage was getting absolutely annihilated at some point during the night. So you got to have thick skin. And as Kevin Hart said at the beginning of the night, like, you don't ever want to mess with a comedian, because comedians are the pros of coming back at you in real time. Like, yeah, they can just think of things in real time on the fly to cut you down. So, you know, if you give them a look, or you try and make a quip at them, or you look at them side eye, like, they are going to destroy you. It's why a lot of people who go to comedy shows, they sit way in the back. They hope that no one sees them. You don't want to sit in the front row where the comedian can, you know, have open season with you. So that's kind of how this was. If you were on stage or you were in that front area, everyone was fair game. So it was wildly entertaining, I got to say, in a very, you know, sick way. It was kind of the train crash I couldn't look away from.
Yeah, exactly. I was dying laughing. I got a headache afterwards because I was laughing so many times. I'm like, oh, my head hurts, my eyes hurt. But yeah, it was great. It was just well produced. I love how Tom Brady had the last word. Of course, he gets roasted for 2 hours and 45 minutes. Then he gets to go up there and do his thing, which was great. And he totally dropped the mic and killed it on the way out.
Yeah. And he should have the last word. Yeah. It was his roast. And again, I don't know how much they paid him, but the two things I want to know, how much did they pay him? And then I want to know what the viewing numbers were. There was the live audience, like I was watching it live. And then obviously there's on demand. And sometimes, you know, Netflix and Apple and the streaming services don't release numbers. If I'm Netflix, I bet these numbers are pretty darn good. I'd be like beating my chest and touting these numbers and saying like, this is why Netflix is the home to things like this, or even, you know, live sporting events in the future. We've got the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson event coming up this summer, live on Netflix. So Netflix is learning how to do live sports. And will this be a door opener to, you know, hey, one day they're going to get in the media rights game and they're going to start bidding on things. Them and Apple have the most amount of money of any of the streaming services. So anytime they want to jump in, it's not a matter of money. It's just a matter of, do they want to spend it or not?
Well, and I think they showed well. I think Netflix did a great job. It was produced well. It looked good. It sounded good. Everything technically looked good. And you're right. I think who doesn't want live stuff like that? Like seeing it happen, especially like a roast like that, you don't know what's going to happen. It's live. It's unedited. That's the fun of live television. Like we talk about with sports, you just don't know what's going to happen every night. You watch a game. Same thing with entertainment like this. Live is where it's at because it's happening in the moment. You don't know what's going to happen. It makes stuff tweetable. People retweet. The videos are out and boom, you get all this interaction.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Talent, hard work, focus, and determination got you here. Now take the right steps to prepare for your future and ensure that you stay at the top of your game, your business, your craft. Morgan Stanley Sports and Entertainment is a division of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management, dedicated to serving the unique and sophisticated needs of elite and professional athletes, entertainers, executives, creators, and other top talent and professionals in the sports and entertainment industry. They deliver the education, strategies, and expertise you need to help advance your financial game plan at every stage of your career journey. They speak the language. They know your business. Morgan Stanley will work with you to achieve your goals. I've trusted Morgan Stanley with my personal wealth management for almost 20 years. Visit Morgan Stanley at morganstanley.com/GSE.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
All right. As we record this, we do not have finalization of the NBA media rights deal. We've been talking about this for weeks on this show. As we record this, it looks like ESPN ABC has package A, which will include the NBA finals and a good chunk of playoff basketball. It looks like Amazon has the streaming element of this package. The one part of the package that seems to be yet to be determined is the Warner Brothers versus NBC. So is it going to be NBA on TNT? Is it going to be NBC, who had the NBA rights years ago? That's something to pay attention to. It's going to have a domino effect. You know, Ernie Johnson's already said, I'm not leaving Turner under any circumstances. Will this be the breakup of that incredible NBA on TNT studio crew that we've all grown to love with Ernie, Shaq, Kenny, and Charles? Will they all become free agents, which a lot of reports say if NBA on TNT loses the NBA rights, Shaq, Kenny, Charles become free agents immediately? Do they stay together? Do they split up and go to networks that are getting NBA basketball? It's going to be interesting, but as we record this right now, we don't have news on the finalization of that deal. Follow us on X at SB Radio. We'll keep you up to date. All right, Griggs, we told everyone last week that May is an epic month for guests on Sports Business Radio. So coming up in moments, Baseball Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr. Next week, my scheduled guest, one of my favorite broadcasters ever, another class act, someone who actually has a backstory with me, was a mentor to me when I was a student broadcaster at Loyola Marymount University. I met James Brown of CBS, who was doing college basketball games for CBS when I was doing LMU broadcasts with Hank Gathers, Bo Kimble, Paul Westhead, that team. And what a nice man. I mean, I'm a student. I'm a nobody. And James Brown takes me under his wing, calls me on the phone occasionally. Hey, Brian, how you doing? You know, really tried to mentor me as a young person after we met during some of these LMU broadcasts for CBS and LMU radio broadcasts for the ones that myself and Keith Foreman were doing. So James Brown, he is a Sports Broadcasting Hall of Famer, 3-time Emmy Award winner. I know everyone watches him on the NFL Today during the NFL season. That show is going to look different this next upcoming season. They're losing Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason, and they've moved on from them. They're adding J.J. Watt, who has already been on there, and Matt Ryan. So it's J.J. Watt, Matt Ryan, Bill Cowher, Nate Burleson, and then James Brown is kind of the quarterback of that team and keeps everyone on time and on program, and he just does such a great job. He's going to be presented with the Lifetime Achievement Award at the 45th Annual Sports Emmy Awards Ceremony on Tuesday, May 21st in New York. And I am so looking forward to having James Brown here on Sports Business Radio next week to discuss his career. We've had some great broadcasters on this show. I think of Bob Costas, Tom Rinaldi, Bonnie Bernstein, Maria Taylor. There have just been some really great ones. And we're going to now add James Brown to the list. But this one's personal to me because JB is such a great guy. And like I said, he was a mentor to me when I was a college student at Loyola Marymount. And I've just admired his career from afar since then for many years. And I'm excited to catch up with him next week on Sports Business Radio.
Anytime you can have a Hall of Famer in any industry, you take that. And he is definitely one of those. I've grown up watching him and love watching his storytelling is really good. And he's just such a likable guy, and you know him, and he's just down to earth and just personable, and looking forward to it.
So the following week, we're going to have another icon on the show. So we're going to have 3 weeks in a row where you're just going to go, oh my gosh, these are people at the top of their industry. Not going to tell you who that person is yet because we need to firm up some more details, but that's going to be great too. So May is going to be a great month here on Sports Business Radio. Griggs, thanks for all you do with producing these conversations and making them sound good. But without further ado, coming up next, my conversation, wide-ranging, with Cal Ripken Jr., first ballot baseball Hall of Famer. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. Fans walk into stadiums with one thing, their phone. It's their ticket, their wallet, and how they stay in touch. That's why the best teams connect their venues with Boingo Wireless. Teams like the LA Clippers, Atlanta Hawks, Chicago Bears, and San Diego Padres trust Boingo to connect their stadiums and arenas with cutting-edge 5G and Wi-Fi. These teams know that connectivity isn't just another amenity. It's critical infrastructure that drives revenue, makes venues safer, and takes the fan experience to new heights. Take Petco Park as an example. Boingo's private 5G network at Petco Park helped increase the stadium's food and beverage revenue by 10%. By making the mobile payment process completely frictionless and increasing the volume of beers sold. With Boingo, Padres fans enjoy cashless concessions and more time enjoying the action. Where will a connected stadium take your team? From mobile ticketing to security cameras to kiosks, connect every piece of stadium technology with Boingo's converged wireless networks. Boingo's neutral host networks feature distributed antenna systems and small cells to deliver fast Wi-Fi service and cellular coverage for AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and more. As you plan for the future of your stadium, make 5G part of your game plan and choose Boingo Wireless as your trusted connectivity partner. Learn more by downloading Boingo's free 5G playbook for stadiums and arenas. Head to boingo.com/5G
5G Stadium to get your copy. That's boingo.com/5G Stadium.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
My guest is Cal Ripken Jr., first ballot Baseball Hall of Famer, World Series champion, 19-time All-Star, two-time American League MVP. He played a record 2,632 consecutive games. He's back in a formal capacity with the Baltimore Orioles as part of David Rubenstein's ownership group. Cal, thanks so much for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
Very good. That sounds pretty daunting, the 2,632 games, when you think about it in hindsight. When I was going through it, it seemed like it was just you're going out and having a ball game each day, and it just kind of added up. But yeah, thank you for having me.
Let's start there then. You know, there's a lot of players now, load management. I've had elite athletes on this show, and they talk about availability being a skill. You did this better than anyone. What drove you to play 2632?
I think physically, you know, the whole issue of load management or how grueling I could be. It seems like the ideology now is maybe an everyday player might get 145, 150 games out of the 162, and you get 150 of the better games. But there's so many intangibles in the sport, and the playoffs can, as we've seen in history, the playoffs can boil down to one game, whether you make the playoffs or not. And that one game could be in April, May, June, July, August. And the intangibles that a player can bring besides getting hits and besides turning a double play, his experience, the way you respond in a pickoff situation or a bunt play situation, the eighth inning at Yankee Stadium can determine the outcome of the game. And I always felt that even if I wasn't hitting, that I had something to give to the team each and every day. And in my day, the definition of an everyday player was every day. Eddie Murray was probably my living example right in front of me, is that he showed me the importance of being in there, you know, every single day. And he showed me the importance of, in those crucial situations, how we can help impact the game. So Eddie was one of the better leaders by example that I've ever been around.
Looking back on it, would you have taken some time to, you know, maybe sit during a slump and get yourself right? Or are you proud of the fact that you played the 2632 no matter what?
Well, I'm certainly proud of it. And you got to put aside your individual slumps, even though in some ways, I think I used to view that as a little bit selfish. Said, okay, I can get myself right. Let me take a 3-day vacation and then I'll come back. But in the meantime, you're facing Roger Clemens or you're facing somebody else in that. I think selfishly, if I wanted to preserve statistics, maybe I could say, I'm 0 for my last 15. We just played 15 innings last night. We got Roger Clemens in a day game in Boston. But today would be a pretty good day to take a day off. You know, if I could handpick 8 or 10 guys that I didn't hit real well and then and let somebody else worry about it. But I always thought that my responsibility was to come to the ballpark, put yourself in the hands of the manager and say, you know, I'm here to play if you want me to. And the managers wanted me to. They created this thing called the streak. Now, after it got to a certain point, one can say that it was too big for the manager to make a decision anymore, which I always disagree with. But I always thought that my job, as simply as it was, is to come to the ballpark ready to play. And if that manager writes your name in the lineup, then you play.
You were born in Maryland. You were drafted by the Orioles. You were managed by your dad. You played with your brother. You played all 21 years with the Orioles. Now you've come full circle. You're back with the team as a co-owner. What does that feel like?
It's, I knew it was going to be pretty good. I was excited about it, the prospect of being part of the group. But it's better than I thought it was going to be. You feel a part, you know, even though, it's formally in a different capacity. I've always lived and breathed the Orioles. You know, my dad was there. My childhood was watching the Orioles. My dad came to the big leagues. I got a chance to watch him at the big league level. And then I went away and played minor league baseball and got a chance to play there my whole career. So, you know, early on in my retirement, there were some times when I was asked to interview for a managing job or something like that. And so some of the times I went a little bit down that road, but I could never see myself outside of the Orioles organization. So going back to the stadium now, I find myself as part of this ownership group. I'm engaged. I'm watching every pitch. I'm going to almost every game. It feels I'm recharged, you know, inside. And I would say that it was the 20 years after I was out of baseball. I mean, it gave me an opportunity to go off in business, learn about business, try to meet some new challenges that and experience a newer type career. But I think I always had a leg in to where the Orioles were. But now it's I got both feet in, my whole body's in, and I'm engaged and it's fun.
So if you could map out your specific role with the Orioles, and you know they're in first place as we record this, they've got a great farm system, lots of success. What would you want your contributions to be as co-owner?
Well, it's interesting. I guess 10 years ago, if this would have happened, or I don't know, I'd have to go back and look at the exact point of history when the Orioles were going through a rebuilding process. Then you would have to say, okay, the baseball piece has to be fixed. Baseball piece does not have to be fixed. And a matter of fact, you might want to take your hands all the way off of it. Mike Elias has done a really good job of peppering the whole organization with talent. You know, he has a scouting background, has drafted really well, identified players from other organizations that fit, and he's built a really wonderful culture. So, you know, I think my job is to watch and learn, ask questions, and and be engaged so that if Mike Elias is a sounding board or he wants to talk about something where I can help, then I'd gladly do that. From a business standpoint, you know, I had 20 years in the business world, understand a little bit about marketing. I can be a tool in the process of getting the community back engaged. We're drawing pretty well. I think we're about 25,000 a game right now. Plenty of room for improvement on that. And maybe my role in the early parts is to help the business side, you know, get back to where they were when we were drawing 3 million fans a year.
I know your dad was such a big influence on you on the field. Who taught you the business ropes? You just talked about learning business. Who kind of took you under their wing and said, Cal, this is how we do it on the business end?
Well, I mean, I had the good part about having success in a sport is that when you leave the sport and you go on into the business world, there are a lot of people willing to help you. I mean, I remember in the early days, we had my agent, Ron Shapiro, was part of an advisory board. Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, sat on the advisory board and sort of channeled the resources. But there's no real substitution from actually learning on the job. I felt like I had spotted everybody 20 years ahead of me because I'm starting at 41, you know, in the business world. But you put your time in, you learn, you make mistakes, you correct the mistakes, you make good hires, you make some bad hires, and then you kind of go through the process. And by engaging in it, you learn a whole lot along the way. It is interesting. I learned that I didn't spot everybody else 20 years because there was a lot of principles and values that you learn as a baseball player that can apply to your success in the business world. You know, I always joke where could I evaluate a CFO if I'm hiring a CFO? Probably not. I need help with somebody to say, okay, here are the skill sets that are there, but I can look at them. I could see if I like them, look at the work ethic, you know, I can get a feel for them and I can use my instinct to make a decision on that. But you do need help and you need to build a team around you that has those abilities that where they can advise you. So I think that was the strength in what we were able to accomplish in Ripken baseball. And my brother Billy was in the same boat. So we could do that together. And our intentions were always good. I think in the beginning, I think we were a little too philanthropic about it. You know, you can say, well, you know, we can cover the cost for this. We can cover the cost for that. And you realize that it has to wash its own face in order for it to have any sort of staying power. And we were able to build a model that that worked really well and was self-sustaining, which was really good. But I don't know if there's any secret formula. Just put your time in, listen, do it, and then and learn and grow from that.
I want to talk about Ripken Baseball and some of your other business ventures in a minute, but let me go back to on the field. Again, 26-32, you showed up for work every day. I'm really interested in the process of the greats like yourself. When you came to the ballpark as a player each day, did you have a process and routine that you like to stick to?
I think we all learn that routine is our friend, you know, because the pressure gets to you. The slumps are a part of the game. Your success rate is so low, even if you have a great year, you're at 300, which are still making 7 outs out of 10. And so you have to learn how to deal with all that. And I think to keep things even keel, don't get too high when you're hot, don't get too low when you're not, a routine can provide that stability. And so over the years, you might learn a little bit more about yourself, and then you start to substitute different things in your routine at different times of the year. I mean, in one of my better years, my best years, I think, was 1991, I didn't take batting practice for the last 2 months. So, I mean, I was in such a good groove and such a good timing. All I needed to do was get loose. And I remember Mike Mussina was laughing one day. He said, I've never seen anything like this. You're not taking batting practice. But you learn that when you have your timing right, sometimes your batting cage work or your routine, you know, might take you in a different direction. And sometimes you just have to step back and say, I don't need that. So I used to run out in the outfield with the pitchers, you know, Mike Mussina, when they were out the thing, just to get myself going for the game. But routines are really important. And if you're talking to a young kid, find out what drills that work for you that translates to the game, whether it's soft toss from the front, whether it's T work to control your body a little bit more and create your timing, whether it's hitting off someone throw a little harder, you know, whatever those timing mechanisms are for you, get into that and you fix your slump by that routine. You know, you gain your confidence by that routine, especially when you're not getting on the field. You got to get it someplace. And I evolved over time, but I think the routine is a friend to all big league players.
All right, let's talk about Ripken baseball. Cal, I would argue that you and your brother, Billy, have as much influence on youth baseball as anyone in this country. I mean, what you guys are doing is phenomenal to get kids of all ages, all backgrounds involved in baseball. I tip my cap to you. Why did you and Billy start Ripken baseball?
You know, I have to tell you right now, I'm going like this to my back and I'm going like this to my arm right now. Being the Iron Man, I feel like Plastic Man right now. I think I worked or through, I was too hard on the rowing machine, and I think I did something to my upper. I got a little on my arm, but I'll work through that for the interview. Billy and I started Ripken baseball because we had a dad that we thought was the encyclopedia of baseball. And then dad was able to give us the benefit of his experience and sometimes his knowledge, many times through teaching other players. You know, we witnessed him, you know, he was the batting coach, the hitting coach, they're one and the same, the pitching coach, the catching coach, the infield coach. We didn't have specialty coaches back when my dad was in the minor leagues. He was all of those. And so many times when he was working with the different players, we benefited from that view. And so we realized that we were one of the lucky ones that got a chance to have the dream and go through and know what it feels like to play at Fenway and Yankee and just have a great experience all the way around. And so we wanted, and we realized that only this many of us get a chance to do that, of all the people that want to do that. So we wanted to try to bring an experience down to their level, try to give them a big league experience, what it feels like to play in a ballpark like Fenway. So we have our own Fenway, our own Green Monster. You know, make different dimensions, celebrate different fields. So the game sometimes is played differently in those fields. You know, a power team, you know, obviously would have an advantage in a smaller ballpark, but a speed team might have an advantage in a bigger ballpark and a defensive team. And we wanted to bring all those sort of experience to the kids. So that was our goal. And I said that we were a little philanthropic, you know, early on, because we just thought the ideas are good, then the business side will come around. And maybe that was the right way to go for us, is that we were so energized by giving the kids and trying to make the kids the best baseball players they could be through our camps and clinics and those things. But through our tournament business, to make them feel like they had a big league experience and that baseball, there's a lot to love about baseball. Instead of going to a field that has a quad where everybody, all the fields are the same and they're all playing and foul balls are coming, you know, over the fence and getting into, Give the field its own identity and give the kids their own space in which to enjoy that that field. So that was the idea, and that was the motivation for us to do it. And because we realized that we were lucky to have the Encyclopedia of Baseball as a dad, but all kids don't have, even though sometimes the dads think they're the Encyclopedia of Baseball, but we really did have one, and we just wanted to give the kids a the lessons and also the experience to like we had at the big leagues.
When you were growing up, I understand you played soccer. Mm-hmm. I've had John Smoltz, Greg Maddux on this show, and we've talked about specialization of sports. They're against it. Where do you stand on kids playing multiple sports? I mean, baseball, very important, but do you believe in development by playing a few different sports?
Oh, for sure. I mean, given the choice, I recommend every kid, when the baseball season's down, put your glove down, pick up a football, pick up a basketball, play soccer, do something else. First of all, there's a wear and tear on your body when you specialize, and maybe we're seeing that sometimes with the pitchers' injuries in the arms and Tommy John surgery earlier and earlier, the development, that you need to give your arm a chance to rest a little bit. But I think the greatest value was how other sports helps you develop your athleticism. So you mentioned soccer. I wanted to play football, but my dad was managing in the minor leagues, and we didn't get back until after September. Football started August 1. Didn't have a chance to jump in, 6 weeks late. But you could jump into soccer, a few days late. And then what I realized is that, you're not using your hands, so your balance and your agility at different angles, at different speeds, and all that kind of stuff is always being affected. So the sheer nature of the sport, you're developing where your body is at different times at high speed, and how you kind of develop your endurance, balance, and all those things. So I thought it was good. It developed my lower half. We had a coach that, if we weren't doing well, he loved to run hills, and so we ran hills a lot. And then you develop strength in your lower body. And the benefit. I love basketball. Basketball probably is my favorite of all sports. Maybe even including baseball. Is that if you think about it, you're developing quick feet. You're moving fast. You don't know which direction you're going to go. There were some movements in there that I always loved, how playing basketball and getting in basketball shape, how it made your legs feel for baseball. You had a more of an explosive sort of feel. Maybe it was like 2.5 hours of plyometrics that you were running around doing. So I'm a big advocate for kids playing all sports, because I said, but as you have to make a decision when you start to specialize, if you delay that a little bit longer, you're going to develop your athleticism. You're going to be a better athlete for the sport that you choose. And so that's what I feel. But on the same token, witnessing, there are some kids that just love baseball. They don't want to play anything else. And they can play baseball 365 days a year. And I'm okay with that, as long as it comes from them. Not if you look at parents and saying, okay, I'm doing this for your own good. I'm enrolling you in this, and I'm doing this, and you're practicing here. I've had a parent tell me, we treat baseball just like we treat homework. They have so many hours of homework, and they have so many hours of baseball each and every night. And I was kind of thinking, what does your kid feel about that? And he says, well, he doesn't like it a whole lot, but he'll thank me someday. If that's the case, you're kind of taking the joy out of the sport. And if you really have a talented kid, he needs to actually have that joy inside to push him through the more challenging times when your parents are not there. And so so I'm open-minded to people playing year-round baseball, but I am an advocate. I see the value in my own life of playing other sports, learning other sports, and how that affects your athleticism overall.
One of the other ways you're honoring your dad is the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. Cal, you're doing such amazing work making baseball accessible to underprivileged areas. I saw you just open your 500th STEM center. Maybe you can talk about the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation and this legacy that it's leaving, not just for your dad, but for you and your brother, Billy.
Yeah, for sure. And the idea was born out of, we lost dad at 63 years old, to lung cancer. And I mean, I'm 63 right now, and I'll turn 64 later this summer. And we always thought that we just lost him. And to me personally, it was like your safety net was gone. If everything had happened, you could always go to your dad to help fix things or help you think through things. And then all of a sudden you didn't have him. So Billy and I were struggling with that. We started to think, how do we capture dad's legacy? What was dad's life all about? And professionally, he wanted to be a big league player, but he got hurt. And then he went into the minor leagues. And then his job was to help talented kids or young people develop their baseball skills and get to the big league. So he always developed kids, but he also used baseball to go around to other areas. Sometimes he did these free clinics. And I went along with him quite a few times. And for a kid, it's kind of boring to sit through someone talking about things instead of you being able to chance to do it. Dad did that. And I think he was trying to reach kids. And I believe, and I'm just surmising right now, is that Dad lost his dad when he was 10, you know, into a car accident. And he had to become the man of the house at an early age. And I think he always had a special place for someone that didn't have that male influence in their lives. And so he used baseball to go into these environments, you know, get them excited about the sport of baseball. But really, he was trying to give them other options or to show that this is what the value of sports can do for you. And so we decided to start a foundation with that in mind and try to reach kids that had more challenges than most, and try to reach them through sport and give them those sort of options. And along the way, we matched mentors with those kids, which had benefited the mentors and the kids. We created programs. Heck, we even got into building these beautiful fields. They're called youth development parks because we see those places as a outdoor classroom. And we build them, many of them, in the theme of a baseball ballpark. They're turf. They cost a lot of money. They're really nice. They stay nice for a long time. But we don't care if you play baseball on them or not, you know, as long as you use them, you know, for whatever purposes that you want. And we've had really good success. And that success led us to doing what are the other needs that we can help with this group of kids. And science, technology, engineering, and math, you know, came up as an idea. One of our board members had the idea. We put a pilot program together. It was very successful. And then all of a sudden there was this huge outpouring and the need for these centers. And we realized we were pretty good at putting those together. And so we just celebrated our 500th one. Blows me away. But when you're sitting in a classroom, now I wasn't good at science. I was really good at math though. To see the kids tinker with these kits and then having been exposed to the different programming that goes on and programming a robot or putting together circuits. When they start to do that, the eyes get big, almost like when you first learn how to play baseball. You know, you teach some kid how to hit, he has success hitting the first time or hits it on the good part of the bat, and you've helped him do that, and he sees a joy in it. So I'm a big advocate for exposing kids to all kinds of stuff and find out what they love and what their aptitude is, and then have them follow that. So the foundation has been, it's been very good for Billy and I, but it really was designed to bring tribute to Dad's legacy, which it does. But I think we're able to help kids and makes you feel really, really good when you, and we've been doing this long enough where you see people that have gone through and graduated some of our programs and then went on to have a really successful life. We started college scholarships, you know, because we first started to think, how many kids can we help? And then we said, okay, we got this many kids that we can help. You know, how deep can we help them? You know, and little things when you're a parent and then your child gets to the point where they're going to go on a job interview, then you're advising them how to go on a job interview. But many of the kids that we help don't have that sort of support. And then so you start to think, okay, we need to step in and start to help them not only get through high school, help them get to college, but then after college or when you're looking for a job, how do you help them with some small things? How do you dress for it? How do you speak in it? How do you build a resume? All those things have been pretty gratifying. And all those things are things that byproducts of just the desire to want to help kids.
Amazing. You're just doing amazing work. You should be very, very proud. Let's talk about Unrivaled Sports. You recently formed a partnership with Josh Harris, David Blitzer to form Unrivaled Sports. Tell our listeners what that partnership's going to do.
Well, I mean, I met David Blitzer a long time ago. I can't, more than 10 years ago. I was asking a little bit for his advice about business and all that kind of stuff, because when you do have success in a sport, sometimes you're afforded those opportunities to ask really successful people, for help or for the guidance. And that was my sort of MO. And he was going through the age where his kids were going through sports, and we had that in common. And then years later, they started getting into youth sports. And so we came back together when they bought All-Star Village, and we were talking to them about possibly running the All-Star Village. And then we started looking at what our goals were, and we said, how about we do this together? And I wasn't really thinking about that at all. I was thinking, okay, we're chugging along. We've built a pretty good model now. And we'll get there. But then all of a sudden you realize that you can get there much faster and help way more kids and start to grow across the country when you have the money assets that that they bring to the table. Is that it used to be you have a good idea, you want to work the good idea, then you convince somebody else that's a really good idea, do that. And then you got to say, okay, now how do we raise the money? And then in different challenges or different complexes. But now it seems like you still got to give a really good idea. And if you have a really good idea, you need to make sure that you sell that idea. But as soon as you get approval for the idea, then the money is not it's not nearly the issue. And it makes you feel like I'd rather be a small part of a much bigger pie and help way more kids than be a big part of a smaller pie and then kind of do it on a slower basis. And maybe it had something to do with my age. At this point, you're thinking, you know, when you're just out of baseball at 41, you think you still got your full business life ahead of you. When you're 20, you feel like you got your whole life ahead of you. And then now when you reach that 60 plateau, or right around there, you start to think, well, I don't have the same time yet. How do I speed this up? So the chance to expand and help more kids the ability to go out and acquire different businesses now to add to what you've accomplished was really appealing to Billy and I. And we couldn't be happier with Josh and David. They're the perfect partners to have.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what that partnership does. You're an executive producer now with Moonball Media. You're going to be doing a series that explores iconic feats in sports. The first episode is going to be, you know, really examining your streak. How does it feel to be an executive producer?
Go figure, huh? What opportunities that you get. But the concept is really great. You know, unbreakable records, those sorts of things. And the idea that the streak or the consecutive game streak by itself is an unbreakable record. I think we're going to explore in that first episode, the one we're going to do, is actually looking at the 5 years of playing every inning of the streak. And because a lot of people don't really know about that. And that streak was ended, 5 years, playing 5 years of every inning. I was ended by my dad. He took me out of the game in Toronto. Our team gave up 10 home runs to the Blue Jays one night. We were getting beat 20-something to whatever. And my dad sat me down and said, how do you feel about coming out of the inning? And I said, how do you feel? And he goes, I think it'd be good for you. And I said, okay. But we're going to explore that a little bit more and really with the value of, you know, what motivated me to do that. And in the when I got taken out, I was kind of torn with whether it was the right decision or not at the time. So I picked up a legal pad and I wrote about 11 pages just of my thoughts.
Wow.
And so I've never shared that with anybody. And I have it still. And so I think this would be the opportunity to share that because it's a little bit, it gives you a little bit of foreshadowing to the future. That happened in 1987. So still 8 years before the 2021-31 timeframe. And it was pretty insightful when I found it and reread it again. There's a couple comical things in there that I say too that would be fun to explore. But I think that's a direction that we're thinking about going first one.
Sounds exciting. You've been involved in all these businesses that we've discussed today. Are there any other projects or businesses that you say, you know, I'd really like to try that?
You know, I think that was the problem early on in your business life is the opportunities were pretty wide and broad and you felt like you wanted to chase all of them. And the real success that I learned is you got to focus that attention on areas and really zone in so you can do a good job there. At this point in my life, and I was surprised a little bit by this. I mean, the ownership, being part of the ownership group now. I thought it still wouldn't change my life that much. I'd still maybe get a chance to go out and play golf. I'm kind of slowing down. I'm not saying yes to as many things as I did, but I find myself engaged now and my wheels are spinning and I have time to actually do that now. So I think it's not new, although ownership is new and all that kind of stuff and what your role, how you can explore what your role would be, where you can help the team in many ways. I think my energy is moving towards that direction, not by looking for a new idea.
Let's end with this. I'm making you commissioner of baseball. You can change anything in baseball, good or improve. What do you do?
I don't think I can convince the commissioner. I guess unless I am the commissioner. When they first talked about the speed up rules and stuff like that, I was thinking there's no real place for a clock in baseball. Baseball has its own sort of rhythm, but it did get to a point where there was a lot of dead time that was being wasted, whether it was too much time out of the batter's box, too much time on the pitcher's mound, walk up music where you'd wait and had long time in between innings. So I think the shot clock, the pitch clock, was a good addition because it shaped the behavior. And I would still argue that baseball was played that way years ago and then just got to a point where they got slowed down. And so now that's been restored, and I think that's been wonderful. I still don't like the ghost runner on second base. if you're playing in a game and your playoff chances can go down to one game, when you're playing another team and you put somebody on second base, it's a gift. You didn't earn it second base, even though it's given to both teams. Maybe the team that has a little bit less depth has a little bit less in the bullpen because of the way they've handled it, you have a much better chance to win a game if you're the better team, if you earn your way to second base in extra innings. And so that would be the one thing that I would have them look at. I've come along a little bit with the two engagements over to first base. I didn't like that in the beginning with, but you watch the application of it. There's a strategy that develops, for the base stealing game. And the base stealing game has come back a little bit. I'm not sure as a result of that. I'm glad that the game looks different from a shift standpoint, but I think that would have taken care of itself over time. You'd realize that that wasn't as advantageous as we all thought it was. So I didn't like the making the shift rule mandatory. I think you should be able to play anywhere on the field you want and whatever advantages you can derive from that, as long as it's in fair territory. So I think the one thing, if I boil it down, maybe the one thing is that if I had one thing to change, I wouldn't put that runner on second base.
Interesting. Well, Cal, you're such an impact to so many people. You have been a role model to many. You've always carried yourself with class and professionalism. Continued success to you with all that you're doing. I'm excited to watch you as co-owner of the Orioles and the impact that you're going to have there. And thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio.
It's a lot of fun. Thanks for letting me think about my life and think about my career and think about my goals. It's pretty exciting right now, and I'm really energized by it.
Well, you've done it better than anyone I've ever had on this show, so congratulations.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Hey, everyone. Brian Berger here. I love innovation, and I love tech. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about what MatSing is doing. You may have a solid wireless network at your venue, but do you have the highest performing antennas in the world to power your network? MatSing is the leader in multi-beam lens antennas. Venues such as AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, Allegiant Stadium, which is home of the Las Vegas Raiders and Super Bowl 58, and Amalie Arena, which is home of the Tampa Bay Lightning, all have MatSing's innovative lens antennas. As a matter of fact, MatSing's antennas are deployed at over 100 venues globally, including 50% of NFL venues, 35% of NBA and NHL venues, several Formula One racetracks, and even at the upcoming 2024 Paris Olympics. Do you want to deliver a fully connected venue experience to your fans? Then MatSing is the key to delivering a best-in-class mobile experience for fans who want to post pictures, watch videos, order food, or place real-time wagers. For more information on how MatSing can help your venue, visit MatSing.com. That's MatSing.com. Or email Tracy Salazar at TracySalazar at MatSing.com. That's Tracy Salazar at MatSing.com. MatSing is the exclusive antenna partner of Sports Business Radio. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to the Sports Business Radio team, Brian Griggs, Nicole Wardle, and Josh Blank. A reminder to kindly subscribe to our award-winning podcast. Our feed features 20 years of podcasts with the biggest names in sports and business. Go to Apple or Spotify Podcasts and click on the plus sign in the upper right-hand corner.
That way, every episode of Sports Business Radio will be delivered to your listening device each week. We'd love to have you give us a 5-star rating and write a review of our podcast as well. It'll take you just 2 minutes. I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, X at SB Radio, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. SBR is produced by Brian Griggs at GriggsProductions.com.